Annabelle Smith, welcome to the Duraflex podcast. How are you doing today?
Hello, Sam Dorman. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
A quick intro of you. I had to look this up because you've got too many accolades for the people
Oh,
listening.
goodness.
We have a three-time Olympian, Olympic bronze medalist 2016, two-time world championship bronze medalist and silver medalist, Commonwealth gold medalist, and two-time Commonwealth bronze medalist and World Cup bronze medalist. Am I missing anything else?
You
I'm sure
smashed that.
there's many national championships to be thrown in there, probably too many to count. But is that
Maybe
does
a
that
few.
does that suffice?
That was a good wrap.
Okay. How are we doing today?
Good. Just fresh home from the gym. Got my morning workout in. Got about 4 days till I get on a plane again, so feeling good.
That's the life of the athlete these days. You're traveling
Yes.
quite often all over the place. Where was the latest trip?
Latest trip was Montreal for the first World Cup. And then, yeah, given we live so far away in Australia, it's a pretty long trip to get home, especially when you miss a connection and add an extra 24 hours. But we've got a quick turnaround until we go to the second one in Berlin. But I'm
And
excited.
where were you stuck at?
We were stuck in San Francisco, which was not a bad place to be stuck because I've done quite a fair bit of travel, but I've never been to San Fran. So we rented bikes, we hopped over the bridge, we caught a ferry past Alcatraz. So made the most of our 12-hour day.
It's a cool area. It's a nice area. I've been there quite a bit now, living in Reno.
Yeah, it's so cool. I'm excited to go back.
So let's do some storytelling. We've got what, an hour or so? I want to see. You've got probably has a, have a million stories about yourself. I know I'm going to ask you to talk about yourself a little bit, but give me the lowdown on your intro to the sport of diving, and I'll start picking your brain from there.
All right. Well, if we turn the clock back to when I was just a kid, I've got an older brother and a younger sister, and grew up, we were all super sporty. So mum and dad put us in all the different activities, all the different sports after school. If we weren't at an organized sport, whether that was like athletics or soccer, I also played netball, which I know is not big in the States, but kind of like basketball, but you can't run with the ball. If we weren't doing those things, we were always like in the backyard, kicking a ball, riding our bikes. We lived in like quite a closed off little court. So we had so much space to run around and it was a pretty safe area. So yeah, spent a lot of time outdoors in the backyard, expending a lot of energy, and I was a super energetic kid. But the sort of like best Christmas present I ever got was a trampoline. And so I had a trampoline in the backyard and always used to teach myself tricks and had like no fear and also a pretty natural acrobatic talent without formally doing gymnastics, which obviously a lot of divers do come from gymnastics. So yeah, it was like really random. I don't remember growing up knowing what diving was. I always watched the Olympics on TV. The 2000 Olympics in Sydney were probably my first memory. And I remember watching the athletics and the basketball, didn't really notice the diving. but yeah, when I was about 11, my parents took us to the local pool during the school holidays and they had diving boards and I saw them. I was like, oh, I want to jump off the diving board and that looks kind of fun. So did that and got sort of scouted by one of the coaches during the holiday program. And he asked my parents to bring me back to the pool the next week. So yeah, went back, started just once a week. I thought, how cool is this? Something that I can, you know, challenge myself and learn lots of different skills really quickly. And having that natural ability, the coaches obviously like love seeing an athlete like that or a kid like that because they know that they can teach them lots of things. So, and I was just eager to learn. So yeah, added it to my list of activities once a week for about a year or a year and a half. And then, yeah, not long after that, it was the big jump to, all right, we think you can do something with this. And there's a junior national program that's starting up in Melbourne where I lived. And yeah, joined that program and sort of never looked back from there.
So you started rather late, being 11. I mean,
yeah.
With a diver with a background as extensive as yours and so many accolades, that's pretty late.
Yeah, and I didn't really start like training the 10 sessions a week, 30 hours a week, focused on diving till I was probably like 14. So I had a very quick progression from like 13, 14. I'm pretty sure in our high school, you could do diving as like an inter-school sport. And my sister, who did not formally do diving, she scored higher than me when she was in year 7 and 8 than I did when I was in year 7 and 8. So that means sort of, yeah, 13 years old, she was better than me. So as soon as I turned 14, though, I was off.
Then the raw natural talent just came out. So you started there, and what were the kind of the progressions that you had? What were the, benchmarks that you were like, okay, this is actually something serious and I can take this a bit further? When did you know that?
Oh, it was pretty quick. I reckon, sort of like when I was turning 15. So the group that I started in of like there's probably 8 of us, and we were all between the age of say 12 to 15, and we were all already friends. Everyone was super competitive, everyone was very talented, and but like most importantly, got along. So I think because we had people pushing us every day, we loved it, we all wanted to be the best. It was like the best environment for me to grow up, in diving in that. And it wasn't like too serious yet that, we still went to the national competitions and the school's nationals, which some of the kids in the high performance pathway now don't do those competitions anymore. So we had all these experiences of traveling together, and it was still fun growing up, which I think was the most important thing for me, is that I just like had a really good time. And in Australia, we have an age national stream, which is sort of for like the novice divers, and then we have a junior elite stream, and then the open stream. And I competed at age nationals, and then in the same year competed in junior elite nationals, which is no longer allowed. You can't do that in the same year anymore. But that was sort of between 13, 14, and then once I turned 15, I qualified for my first junior world championship. So that was like a large year of improvement. And obviously having a really good coach taught me a lot, and I just had the energy to burn and energy to learn, and was super motivated, and always naturally competitive as well. So yeah, I was able to qualify for that World Juniors, which was back in Aachen in Germany back in 2008. And I think that was a really big step for me to also open my eyes to see there's kids all around the world who are training just as hard as me with the same goals. And it was like a big boost to come home and continue working hard and realize like maybe I actually could go to the Olympics one day. So I think that was like a big milestone, that World Juniors. And then
And you
yeah,
were
sort of went,
15.
yeah, 15, came back with 2 bronze medals on 1 meter and 3 meter,
So
which was
4 years
pretty
of
cool.
diving. Wow. I mean, I didn't make a junior, I never even made a junior world, and I started when I was like 8.
Yeah, but that's all right. We're all on our own little
Yeah.
journeys there.
I
You
know, but
got your
that's
silver medal,
impressive. It's
so.
But I mean, from the beginning, it was pretty much
Yeah, I was the
training and
annoying
raw
kid.
talent that you were the annoying kid that beat everybody.
Well, it's just, I don't know, things just came to me. I worked really hard. I think I had a really good balance of I loved working hard and I had the talent. So I think you see some kids who have the talent but then don't work hard, and so they get overtaken. Or you get the kids who don't start out with it but work super hard and come out on top. So I just had that nice balance of both.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you mean you can have so many natural athletes and then so many that don't care to train. So, I mean, you look
Yeah,
at,
exactly.
prime example like Tom Daley. He is very naturally talented, but also works really hard, which is nice to see. And it's, you can't just rely on one thing and hope for the other.
No. I think also for me, a big part of me wanting to work hard was that my family gave up a lot for me to be able to dive. My siblings had to stop some of their activities because mum and dad were driving me to and from the city every day for training. So I got a lot of my motivation from wanting to do well for my family as well. And I think that kept me going in some of the more difficult times.
But
And then
that's good that
now.
you viewed it as, you viewed that as motivation, not pressure.
And I'm very lucky. Like, my parents were super supportive. Like, mum used to always tell me at diving competitions when I was younger, like, drop me off at the front of the pool and good luck, have fun. I love you if you come first and I love you if you come last. So like there was never any pressure from my family to be like, you must win or you must train every session if you feel sick or whatever. Like if I had a headache, my mum was so excited to go home early and cook dinner early. Like it was, I never had any pressure to do more than what, you know, my parents knew that I naturally was going to do and wanted to do. So I think I had the right environment to sort of thrive.
That's great. And the same with the coaches.
Yeah, same with the coaches. Always connected really well with my junior coaches. And again, I think being older now and seeing some of the junior kids, you can just see how enjoyable it is for a coach to experience an athlete who wants to work hard and has that natural drive and natural talent. So, I just wanted to be the best that I could be. So I was ready to soak up whatever my coaches and like put full trust in them to tell me what to do and I would do it. So
I see that as a common correlation of kids just having fun when they're young. Because I mean, if you're not having fun while you're doing it, it's like, why am I here?
Yeah, no. And you know, it took me till when I was sort of 18, moved out of home, moved into state to train at our national program. And that was probably the first time that I hit the like, I'm not having fun anymore. What am I doing? I'm a bit lost. So I had that a bit later, but because I had that foundation of diving as a junior and having fun and getting results, that was great. But then, yeah, it was sort of the middle part of my career probably that was the most challenging part for me to navigate.
And so that started when you were 18?
I think so. As you can probably tell, like I'm a pretty big family girl and enjoy that environment around me. But at the time, I was getting college offers from the States and just given the timings, it wasn't really a thing to do when I was 18 or 19 from Australia to go over to college. And we had our national training base in Brisbane under our Australian Institute of Sport. And that was sort of where you're expected to go if you were in the running to make the Olympics or part of the national team. And so, yeah, moved away. It's only a 2-hour flight from home, but I was living with family friends for a little bit and then moved in with some divers as well. And yeah, just sort of had to grow up really quickly and have all these new responsibilities whilst at the same time being in a pretty high stress, high pressure environment, everyone gunning to try and make the Olympics. So yeah, that brought with it some challenges and I feel like I lost myself a little bit, lost my like natural energy and sort of zest. But also I think some of the biggest learnings came from that period of time, which formed me into, you know, being a resilient human now. So definitely wouldn't change anything, but sort of had to get to the point where I had to step back and be like, all right, I need some help from a sports psych to like get me back on the right track. And two, I just got to figure out what's my purpose? Why am I diving? Who am I? What am I doing? And once I sort of stepped back and figured all that out, everything sort of took a turn and went back up the other way.
Now, why do you think your purpose disappeared? Why do you think like you lost track of that or side of it or, you know, where'd that come from?
I think as a kid, I just had no worries in the world. Like I was so innocent to, you know, I just loved diving. I loved doing well. I wanted to do well. I wasn't, I remember going to competitions and people would say, are you nervous? And I'd always be like, no, I'm not nervous. Like, why would I be nervous? I just didn't feel it back then. And then, you know, as you get older and you become a little bit more aware of everything and also having a lot of success as a junior, I then began to think like, oh, okay, I haven't missed a national team in 4 years. I've got to make sure I get back on it this year and I've got to win and I've got to make this team and I've got to qualify for world champs and I've got to qualify for Commonwealth Games. And what happens if I don't? What are people going to think? And I think it's pretty natural for people at that age to sort of go through those thoughts. But it definitely became overwhelming. Like it was more often than not, I was way more worried about what other people were thinking than what like my own happiness and what I was doing and whether I was enjoying that process. So yeah, it was probably all leading into qualifying for my first Olympics and just feeling pressure to fit a mold of an elite athlete and what it looked like to go to the Olympics and matching my synchro partner at the time who, you know, was 6 years older than me and more experienced. And I just didn't have that yet. So yeah, it was a bit of a challenge, but the weird thing is looking back now, I still managed to get pretty good results during that period, but I just wasn't a very happy person or just don't look back with, you know, too many memories of feeling like I was thriving. I definitely feel like it was like an uphill battle, but I just managed to keep crawling my way through it.
Now, do you think that was a product of your environment? Do you think that was a product of your own doing? Where do you think that stemmed from?
Definitely just, I think it was a bit of a product of the environment. It was pretty like a high tense pressure filled environment back then, and a lot of that has changed now, just naturally with time, and the environments that sport is in now is a bit different to what it was back then. But I also think that helped me to achieve what I did could achieve during that time. And then I honestly just think it was that period of, I hit puberty really late, so my body changed when I moved away from home. I sort of thought I had to be super strong and figure things out on my own, and I didn't want to make my parents freak out that I was sad being away from home. So I probably didn't, I bottled up a lot of those emotions as well and didn't open up. And then also I went through a few different sports psychs that just didn't really feel like a good fit. So I just thought I didn't need a psych and I didn't need help or someone just to sort of chat to and get some techniques on how to better cope with the stress. So I think, yeah, just a product of me growing up and trying to figure it out. And also there was a lot of people, a lot of other divers my age and some of the kids that I grew up with who also had moved to Brisbane and going through the same thing. So we sort of just chatted amongst ourselves and thought it was kind of normal that we were all struggling. But looking back now, yeah, we definitely probably could have navigated that a little easier if we had have reached out for help. But yeah, unfortunately at that time we just thought we had to be super strong on our own.
And did this lead into the 2012 games, or was this prior to it, and then, you figured it out
Yeah,
prior to it?
it was a little bit prior to it, but honestly, I probably struggled the most between London and Rio. So I moved back and forth from Brisbane and Melbourne a couple of times, but I was probably at my worst, well, not at my worst, but real on struggle street around 2014 Commonwealth Games leading into that 2015 year. And then I got injured at our trials for World Champs in 2015. And couldn't compete and wasn't selected for that synchro spot. And so another team went over, got a bronze medal. So they qualified Australia that spot for the Olympics for 2016. But that was always then decided the next year at our Olympic trials. And between that period, I moved back home and really sort of, I was at that point, I remember thinking, I don't feel like anyone has faith in me anymore to do well. I don't feel like I'm trusted to step up, and because I put in an injury appeal hoping to get selected and wasn't selected. So I just sort of thought no one cared about me and that I was going to be pushed off to the side the year leading into the Olympics. As you know, Sam, most people who are going to be on that Olympic team are probably at that World Championships. Yeah, so it kind of took me that to move home, get a better support team around me who really just encouraged me to just get back to get your body right, get your mind right. We've got people around you who care about you, who are supporting you, and we're going to get you on that team. So that was probably where it switched. And yeah, then ended up making that 2016 team with Maddie, and we came away with a medal. So I think that was the big turning moment from having those few years of figuring myself out and understanding how to operate as an adult in an elite sporting environment. And yeah, after that, it was a little bit happier times.
That's a lot of drama, though, surrounding that.
Yeah, and do you know what? Not a lot of people probably would have known it at the time or expected that,
No.
but yeah.
Especially the drama with synchro. There is
Yeah.
so much drama with synchro when you're
Yeah.
switching partners, going back and forth, finding a new
Yeah,
partner,
it can be
telling your other
brutal.
partner you're not going to die with them. Because it
Yeah.
was, okay, that now that you say this, it was Esther and Sammy that got the
Yeah.
spot.
Yeah.
And that was
Yeah, and that was
in Rio.
No, so that was in, I think they did that in Kazan in 2015. But then
Oh,
they also went
yeah.
to the World Cup in Rio of 26 first Feb of 2016, so I wasn't there for that either. They probably did well again at that competition, and then in our selection policy, Maddie and I had had 3 good years of competing as well. We sort of split up the World Series between the two pairs. They medaled, we medaled, so we were kind of pretty even going into Olympic trials. And our selection policy stated that whoever won Olympic trials was the team, and Maddie and I won that event, so we were selected. There was a little bit of pushback, obviously, or just
Of course.
emotions flying. So that was a bit hard to navigate, but we knew we did the job that we needed to do, and we're given that opportunity to go to Rio. And yeah, that's when the big pressure was on to now try and yeah, turn that into a good result at the Olympics, which thank goodness happened.
Yeah. So, okay, take a couple steps back. Talk me through Olympic trials. How did you feel going into that? And then how did the event unfold?
So going into that, every Olympic trials or every just trials for a major event, as you probably know, it's like the worst competition ever because everything's
Hatred.
riding on that. When you are at the Olympics or you're at world championships, you're there to just do your job and thrive, and you've got nothing to worry about other than, trying to reach your expectations or whatever. At the trial event, you're trying to get your butt on a seat to that competition. So yeah, high pressure. I also for a long time hated people coming to watch me dive. Like I always knew my parents would be there or my mum would be there, but I always told my parents, I don't want to know, because Olympic trials of 2016 were in Melbourne, so my hometown. I'm like, I don't want to know that my grandma, my aunties, my cousins, my school teachers, I don't want to know who's there. Like, don't tell me. I'm not looking into the stands. I don't want to know, because I was affected by that sort of stuff. So yeah, I just remember being super nervous. Maddie and I had been training well, so that wasn't really an issue. It was more just, all right, how do we, make sure that we execute in competition, given my body's going to be like this and I'm going to have a million thoughts. But yeah, I remember having sort of a routine before the event of listening to a meditation track to sort of calm my mind down, which I hadn't done that for many years. I probably had experimented with that for only 6 months, but I found that it sort of shut off the noise. I'd have my headphones on. I'd be listening to something that was pretty calming to try and just, yeah, get rid of some of that jittery energy. And then, yeah, I actually watched it recently, but I have a video on my phone of our front 3.5 pike from that Olympic trial competition. And like our synchro and our hurdle's perfect. We take off, everything's going well. We like hit the water at the same time. And like I have a little splash, Maddie has a little splash, but like we're on our head. And so like a good dive. And you can just see my coach in the background like screaming and like running out of like the screen, because that was our dive. It was like we had 107 and then Esther and Sammy had reverse 2.5. They were more of a back and reverse team, and Maddie and I an inward and a front team. But yeah, just that was the one that we really needed to nail, and we did. And the relief after that, let me tell you, yeah, it was pretty special. And then we obviously then did a good full out, and just running into the stands afterwards and then seeing all my family, and like I'm pretty sure I bawled my eyes out. The day before I was coming like first or second in individual and messed up in the final. So I came third and was going to miss out on an individual spot. And then, yeah, we backed it up the next day with synchro, and the tears, the sad tears from the day before, were now very happy tears. And yeah, everyone was just super relieved and just happy that we did the job.
Oh, that's beautiful. So, and it was how many, it was prelim semi-final or just semi and final?
I think it was just 2 rounds. Yeah, so a prelim and a final. And then it goes on the combined score. So we knew after that that we were first overall.
Was it a big spread or no?
I don't think so. I think it was pretty close, but I can't remember the exact amount of points. But yeah, it was a you couldn't make a mistake. We knew we couldn't make a mistake.
Yeah, because Sammy and Esther were good. I remember because I saw them more at events when I was diving than seeing you and Maddie because you were that I was more 2014, 2015, 2016.
So that's the thing in Australian diving for my entire career. Probably our strongest event has been women's springboard. So it's always been super tight. And I'm sure there's athletes that have been sort of 5, 6 years younger than me that have hated that I've hung around for so long, or that senior group hung around for so long, because it's hard to crack into that springboard event. And yeah, a lot of the time it has been like a battle at nationals to see if someone can push someone out. So yeah, I've been very fortunate to have had a lot of time. In those spots and on those teams. But I think it's because we've been so strong that's also pushed me to keep going, because if I dropped the ball, I knew I'd be out and get beaten by a kid. So I never wanted that to happen.
So in 2000, you had 2012. How did it go in 2012?
We came fifth, but I don't remember
Okay.
anything from that competition. It was
And
like a
then how was
blur.
it? What was it like post-Olympics 2012?
I felt the Olympic come down that everyone speaks about. I sort of thought I would escape it because I was young and everything was kind of just fun and new. But yeah, I went on a little holiday with my mum afterwards and then came back home, moved back to Melbourne and just went through a bit of a transition again, of figuring out where to from here and starting from scratch again. But that was all right until sort of hit some bumpy times around that. But after 2016, it was a whole different story because Maddie and I had that medal, so that opened up some doors and opportunities that and I probably found that was a better transition. I think I've just lost you in my headphones.
Recording will continue on a new track. Start a new recording for both due to a change in advice.
Yeah,
I think
so
we're
that
good.
was
We're good.
okay. That was an easier transition after Rio because there was a lot of exciting opportunities and I loved that side of it, getting to go to events and yeah, it was kind of opens your eyes to as much as making the Olympics is an incredible achievement for athletes and yeah, just like no one can ever take that away from you from being an Olympian, but to then go one step further and become a medalist, it was yeah, wild to see how many people one came out of the woodwork to try and get involved again, but also just the doors that opened and the opportunities that that brought and just sort of put you on that other extra sphere of Olympic medalists, and that was pretty cool.
Do you think it distracted you any going from, getting a medal and then afterwards being like, oh, there's all these opportunities, all these different things I can do? In my eyes, it was like, yeah, it definitely detracted from my focus of sport at the time, but I'm also like, hey, I got to capitalize on these things because time is
Yeah,
of the essence.
exactly. And I think that's always in the back of our mind. Like, there's going to be another Olympic medalist or there's going to be another World Championship medalist. So you kind of do have to make the most of it whilst you are that hot thing of the moment. But I remember I think I took like 2 months off after Rio. And there was definitely some times where I thought, am I going to retire? Is this me done? Do I just end on top and ride off into the sunset? But yeah, I remember thinking, like, no, I'm not done yet. I'm still. I would have been what 23 in Rio. So I've still got time, but I came back to training the most unfit I've ever been. Like it's not enjoyable when you're in that
But you
position.
earned it. You earned it.
I know, yeah, I did earn it and I definitely made the most of it. But it was not an enjoyable first few months of trying to just like get back into one, my bathers and two. Like I remember doing a front salt on the trampoline and like getting lost. Like I had no idea where I was in the air. So that was a humbling experience. But yeah, I guess, just stuck with it. And I remember all the times you'd come back from a break and think, am I ever going to be able to dive again? And then eventually you can. So thankfully I stuck with it. But yeah, that next 4 year cycle also had its ups and downs and twists and turns. And then we landed during lockdown. So
Yeah, so the next 4 years, how was that training? You've got a medal, your capabilities, and then going into 2020, what was that like?
yeah, definitely felt the you're an Olympic medalist, you have to medal at every competition now kind of thing, or just you have to maintain that level. But again, had lots of changes happen. In 2017, I said yes to an opportunity where I was the female representative for Australia to go to an International Olympic Academy youth participants program in Greece, in Olympia in Greece, which was pretty special. But the flip side of that is that world champs in Budapest were like 2 weeks after I was about to have 10 days in Greece. So also during that time we'd had Andy Banks, who was obviously Tom Daley's coach. He had signed to become the coach in Melbourne and was going to be my new coach. So I went from 10 days in Olympia having all these incredible experiences, meeting people representing Olympic committees from all across the world, but not training, eating hot chips, just not, being an elite athlete. I flew from Greece to Plymouth, where Andy was based. He hadn't moved his stuff yet to Australia. stayed with him, met him prop. I mean, I'd obviously known him, but met him properly as my new coach and his partner. And I stayed at their house, and he coached me in Plymouth, I think, for about 5 days before we met the rest of the team. We're coming over to Leeds for a pre-camp. And looking back now, I feel so bad that I presented myself in that state to Andy. And then that World Championships, didn't have a great World Championships. But again, given where I was at, and it wasn't surprising, but I remember Andy having a sit down with me after that event and just saying, like, I am so, you being in Melbourne is one of the biggest reasons I said yes to this role and I wanted to move. And I think you have so much potential still. I think, we can achieve some really great things together. So I'm really excited by that. And then this is the plan, and we've got to get to work and get you back to where I know you can be. So that was really nice. Like, Andy fully broke down all those barriers straight away. And like, I felt so comfortable and trusted him. And he's a very personable person. So yeah, I felt really comfortable, and but also felt very motivated to like get back in shape and get back to, that elite level of diving, because I wanted to do that for him as well. So yeah, we had an incredible journey for a few years leading into Commonwealth Games in 2018 that were on the Gold Coast. So a home games for us. Maddie and I, between AD, her coach, and Andy, my coach, came up with this mission to try and compete double out for the first time for girls to do in synchro on 3 meter, and with the hope of, performing that in Tokyo and changing our bronze medal to a different color medal. So that was sort of the plan, but that was a bumpy roller coaster of a ride. I would be in a much better position to attempt to do that dive now than what I was back then. But we had some good times with that. We won a gold medal at a London World Series, beat the Chinese competing double out. But then in that Commonwealth Games event, we were coming first, and that Commonwealth Games gold medal was the one that Maddie and I didn't have yet, and we knew that we wanted and could get. So we went into the last round in first place. We competed double out. Maddie knee buckled and got lost. I landed on my face and didn't do a good dive. So we failed that dive anyways, but we got zeros and went from first to last, which was a humbling experience in front of a home crowd. And I never felt comfortable competing that dive. Like, I was
Since
always
then,
nervous, or
or
just the whole time we were trying it. Maddie's an insanely strong and powerful athlete, and it's
yeah.
very hard to try and match her. So I was always pushing harder to try and jump as high as she could, but then trying to do that at the same time as trying to do a very difficult dive that I felt like I could only do well if I had the perfect hurdle and landed on the end of the board and rode the board really well. If I was back from the end or off the side or whatever, it was always just playing catch up, and it rarely went well. But we knew if we persisted and kept going, like, maybe this is going to work out, and we're going to get to Tokyo, and we're going to do this incredible dive, and we're going to win a gold medal. So we persisted. But yeah, sort of obviously that took a real steep halt when leading into 2020, we'd sort of competed at the Montreal World Series, and I'm pretty sure we medaled at that event, came home, and then everything started to shut down leading into Tokyo. And unfortunately, because we didn't medal at the 2019 World Champs competing this double out, mine was not very good, and I think we came fifth or sixth or something. When hindsight, we probably should have just competed full out and safely got on the podium. I think we were third in the prelim, but then dropped back when we put double out in the final. So we didn't have that automatic spot for Tokyo, and then given Australia's restrictions through COVID, we weren't able to get to the World Cup in Tokyo, even when it was pushed to 2021. So didn't have the chance to qualify again, and then we didn't have a synchro team in Tokyo. So that whole plan kind of failed. But at the same time, for those couple of years, I felt proud that we were doing something in our sport to try and push the sport. More girls are competing double out now, not in synchro yet. Oh, actually, the American team do it in synchro. But more girls are doing it individually, and Maddie and I feel like we're kind of the first ones to start doing that. So I think it served its purpose at the time, and it wasn't going to be anyways because we went in Tokyo. But after that, it was, yeah, a bit like, all right, we tried, that didn't work. I don't want to compete double out anymore. So yeah.
But it's a necessity to be competing that dive when you're up against the Chinese and you know, all
Yeah.
right, I can either compete this dive, give myself a better chance at beating them, and risk it, or push that I want to be just on the podium and know that my odds are. So, I mean, kudos to you for pushing that, 'cause it's not, making those decisions are not easy decisions whatsoever.
No, and that's the thing. We wanted to win a gold medal, so we were willing to push it and to try, and we'd done it enough times well that it wasn't a stupid decision, that it was like, 1% chance that we'd land on our head, but it was risky, and sometimes it paid off, sometimes it didn't, but that was also all just practice for 2020. And if we were failing it in 2018, we didn't care. It was all just getting those reps under our belt, leading into the Olympics. So yeah, we had a plan.
And so after that, you kept training, and then you soon after had the Achilles.
Yeah, so fast forward a couple of years, Maddie and I got our redemption gold medal at the 2022 Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. And
With
that
the full
year,
out
I
or a
sort
double
of,
out?
with a full out, we went back to full
Okay.
out. And I think, leading into Tokyo, I was like, I'm going to be done. 2020, win that gold medal, run out of that diving pool, I'm done, moving on. That obviously didn't go to plan. Kept diving to 2022. Had lots of thoughts that year, like, this will be it, I'm done. Like, it was only sort of 1 year, given that Tokyo was postponed, 1 year between Tokyo and Commonwealth Games. So I was like, I'll go for one more, we'll get that gold medal. So I kind of had planned at the start of 2022, I'd signed up for this safari in Africa, in Tanzania, with a group that was run by an ex-NHL player, Brooks Like, and I'd connected with him a few years ago and we chatted all things sport, and he was like a really good support for me during some of my ups and downs in my career. And when he retired from ice hockey, he started this online group, like sort of like an online community of people who were into fitness and travel and adventure and sort of everything that I loved. So yeah, I signed up to go on this safari with his group in December of 2022, thinking that I'd be retired after those Commonwealth Games. Turns out I didn't retire and I kept going, but my coach, December for us is a bit of a slow period anyway, so he was happy for me to go away for 10 days. Yeah, got on a plane to Tanzania, got over there, had the absolute time of my life. It was the best thing I've ever done. Such an enjoyable experience. Took a couple of my friends with me, and then we were part of a bigger group that was very well looked after in Tanzania. And yeah, had incredible experience. And on the second last day, I jumped out the back of a safari vehicle and snapped my Achilles. So that was not great. And I saw my whole career flash before my eyes. I thought, all right, this is how I go out. There's no way I'm ever diving again. On the flip side, I was like, oh my God, I've ruined this for Maddie. She thinks I'm in for the next 2 years, heading into Paris, and what, and someone else will fill my shoes, but that's going to stop that whole thing. And I'm letting my coach down, who was now Matt Helm. He's going to be so mad. And I had all these thoughts, but in that moment, one of my friends that came with me, she's a mum, and she just went into mum mode, and she was like, Annabelle, we are in Africa and you have a snapped Achilles. We need to worry about just getting you home and getting you safe, and don't worry about all that until we're home. So yeah, thankfully I was well looked after, and because I hadn't broken a bone, I didn't have to go to hospital, but the lodge that I was staying at managed to go source me some crutches and a moon boot, so I didn't put weight on my foot. And yeah, I had a FaceTime to my physio back home as soon as we got back to the lodge. And he's like, Annabelle, it's Saturday afternoon and I know you're in Africa. Should I be concerned that you're calling me? And I said, yeah, I'm pretty sure I've ruptured my Achilles. And I obviously had not done that before, but the feeling that I had in my foot when I landed on the ground, I knew I didn't break a bone. I knew I hadn't rolled my ankle. My foot felt like it was disconnected to my leg. So I was like, I think that's my tendon. So yeah, there's a test that you can do where you lie on a like lie on a surface and someone squeezes your calf, and if your foot moves, that means your tendon's working, and if your foot doesn't move, it means it's not attached. So my foot did not move, and he said, yeah, you've ruptured your Achilles, so we need to get you home and we need to book you in for surgery before Christmas. So that was a whirlwind. I had all the emotions. I think I like held it together whilst I was over there because I was part of a big group. Everyone knew I was the athlete training for Paris. I didn't want to make a scene. So also in that situation, I just had this like thought and feeling that if someone's going to do that, I honestly would prefer it be me, because I know I'm going to be okay and I'm going to get better and I've got the right support around me to get better. If it was one of my friends, I would have been freaking out because, I don't know, it's out of my control and I would feel bad for them. And I was happy that it was me. Given how devastating it was going to be, I just knew, like, I'm a strong, fit, young human. I'm going to get through this and I'm going to be all right. So it probably didn't hit me till I was home and woke up from surgery 4 days later and realized, like, all right, I'm out for the next year and this is going to be hard and this is going to be a process. But yeah, thankfully I had my family and support around me to get me through it.
And did you have anything that, you know, pointed towards having Achilles if you prefer, or is this just freak?
Out of the blue.
Wow.
And they said, like, my physio told me, if you have chronic tendonitis in your Achilles, so you've had pain before, you're very unlikely to rupture your Achilles. You might tear it, but you're not going to rupture it. And then the people that do rupture it, it usually is playing pickleball or playing tennis or a 50-year-old running after his kid or grandkid or whatever. So, and it just goes. And quite often it'll feel like someone's just kicked you in the back of the heel and that's your Achilles going. So yeah, it was just an unlucky event. It is my right leg, which has been my hurdle leg. All my power strength has gone through that leg for a long time. So it's taken a big load over the years, but yeah, never thought I'd actually, yeah, see it go.
Jeez. And so you jumped off and you land on both feet or one foot?
Yeah, I land on both feet and just like my right leg just went like limp straight away. And it kind of like I had pins and needles straight away. It wasn't painful. I didn't hear it. It was like my foot was just soft. It was so weird. And then like if I pressed at the back of my ankle, it was like there was no tendon there. It was soft.
I'm feeling my ankle right now.
There was no thick band. It was just like soft. Yeah, it was not
so you
good.
Went home, had surgery, and then rehab began. And this was what this was 2020.
Start of 2023.
Wow.
Yeah, so I pretty much was out from, I had surgery just before Christmas, was in plaster for a week, and then straight pretty much from the new year. I was on a scooter, couldn't weight bear, had a moon boot on. And was pretty much in the boot for about 3 months, and slowly after about 6 weeks, 50% of my weight, a little bit of the time, could go through my leg, and slowly built up to ditching the crutches, fully weight bearing just with the boot on. And I've got so many videos to look back on, of, you know, the first time that I walked without the boot on, or the first time that I walked without the crutches, or the first jump that I did, or like a little step down off a 15-centimeter box. It was crazy. I made a conscious decision, I think, to remove myself a little bit from my training group, just because, you know, everything before the Olympics, everything's starting to ramp up. And I just knew I would get affected by seeing everyone training full time and me wanting to be competing, and everyone was traveling a lot anyway. So there was a little bit of inconsistency back home anyway. So I thought, I'm just going to lock in with my rehab team and, you know, go into the gym, have my one-on-ones and really just focus on my recovery without trying to compare myself, or not even compare, but to be constantly reminded that I'm not in the pool and I'm not fully fit yet. So they were incredible. And my physio, my doctor, my strength and conditioning coach, they all celebrated those little wins with me because they were there every step of the journey. Whereas for some of my teammates, like, they only really saw me go from not being able to do a lot to all of a sudden I was in the pool and doing entries, and then all of a sudden I was jumping, and all of a sudden I could do all my dives. So they didn't see that whole process, which is totally fine. And when you're a long-term injured athlete, you can't expect people to sort of understand every day that you wake up and every challenge that you go through. But it was really nice to have my, you know, close support network clapping me and cheering me on when I jumped off that box for the first time or did a single leg calf raise for the first time. And yeah, it was a process looking back now that I'm actually really happy that I went through, because it taught me a lot. It taught me some patience, which I'm not a very patient person, so I had to learn to be patient. But it also gave me a new perspective for diving, and thought, well, if I'm getting back from this, because when I first did it, I was like, there's no way I can ever dive again. But if I'm going to get back in the pool, this is bonus time. And like, how lucky that I've been able to rehab this injury with a good team and them to get me back to where I got to. So, yeah, sort of took a lot of pressure off worrying about results or if I'm going to get back to where I was previously and just enjoying that journey and that process of improving and slowly getting better and better again. So, yeah, crazy. Yeah.
And now, moving forward, you've gone from the Achilles injury, coming back from that. What was it like getting back in the pool and then getting back in the competition? How was it? It's a totally different mindset once you start
Yeah.
competing again.
Yeah, we always had a really good broad plan. So with an Achilles, the rehab's kind of straightforward, but the thing that's not straightforward is the time. So some people can rehab it in 9 months, some take 12 months, some take 18 months. You just don't know. It's how your body's going to adapt and react to the different stresses that you're putting back on it. But for me, we knew that we had enough time before competing again and before trying to qualify for Paris that I could rehab this properly and it wasn't going to be rushed and I had time. So
You
that
get
was
one
good. And
chance.
we get one chance. We get one chance. But we knew that I needed to be back competing at our like a domestic national comp in December of last year, so 2023. So everything that I was doing, I was like, I've got so much time. I've got so much time. And then all of a sudden, like September came around and I was doing all my dives again, not overly well, but could do everything and knew that there were still improvements that were going to come. And for me, inward 2.5 was the hardest to get back because for my Achilles, it was, you're starting on your toes, so you need all the strength, you need all the balance, all the power to get the right technique out of the board. So that was always going to be the hardest one for me to perfect again because I didn't have that control from the start. So sort of was working through all those things, then all of a sudden I'm in October. I'm like, all right, we've still got, a couple months, but it's getting close now. And then all of a sudden I was like, I'm competing in 2 weeks. I am not ready mentally. My body was ready. Like the dives were there. I knew, my aim was always to be peaking or to be back at full balls for world champs for Doha. So we needed to make the team in December, but I knew it wasn't going to be my best diving. But I needed it to be enough. So, yeah, sort of freaked out a couple of weeks before and had all those thoughts again that I, had navigated earlier in my career of worrying about what other people were going to think. And I knew I was going to have all the eyes on me because everyone was like, she's been gone for a year. What's Annabelle going to do? Is she going to be back? Like, I hadn't done many camps or I hadn't been around the whole national team and the national coaches in a long time. So I was conscious of that, but I really had to be strong in like, this has been a major injury, and I've done an incredible job with my team to get back to the position of even being able to compete. So I need to trust that. I need to be proud of that. And I just need to let it happen. And whatever happens, I've done all that I can to put myself in that best position. So, yeah, got to competition day. Thank goodness for Maddie because she was obviously solid and had been training well. I landed on my head, but my hurdles were like this far back from the end of the board. I felt like an alien competing. I had no idea what I was doing. But we managed to do enough to win the event and get ourselves on that team. So it was a bit of a wake-up call, just of, okay, that was always going to be hard, just given the circumstances. But now we've got to really switch on and get back to that high-performance mindset. So yeah, we had a lot more time together between December and going into that World Champs in Feb. And yeah, by the time Feb rolled around, I think we put ourselves in a really good position to compete well, and that happened in Doha. So, yeah, it's weird to think that wasn't that long ago now that I'd just started competing again, and
Yeah.
yeah, we're back to it.
You're comfortable with short timelines.
Yeah, it's
You
got to make
are,
the
because I
most of
mean,
it.
I'm not good with that. Short timelines are
Yeah.
scary, daunting, but it seems you really come through with a short timeline and a lot of
Yeah,
pressure.
it's the experience, I think. Like really when you get to this end of your career, and that's what I had to rely on. I'm like, I've got to trust, I've done the work for my body, but now I've got to trust that like my experience will just come through and the competition, it's going to be shaky, but it's not going to be horrendous and it's not going to be worst case scenario. So I've just got to put trust in that. And I think I did that more for Doha, given it was my first international comp again with everyone and high pressure because we needed to qualify that synchro spot. But I just put a bubble around me and I know that works for me to really just focus on myself and not listen to the noise and not be watching other people and just lock in on what I needed to do. And that worked out for us, which was good.
And so you felt real good in Doha, or do you think comp wise,
yeah.
You know, what would you grade yourself?
Honestly, I was really happy with Doha because not only did we dive well, which is always, you know, we can get a good result and feel like we didn't dive well, but we mm-hmm. got a good result and dive well. So, and I also enjoyed the competition. I didn't have too much of that negative, like, oh, this is uncomfortable, or I sort of just lent into it and I knew it was going to feel uncomfortable. So I expected that. And I just wanted to give myself the best opportunity to have a good event. And if I'm in a negative mindset from the start, that's not going to happen. So Maddie and I had done some work on that, and we really have our competition routine set. We know how each other operates. And I think another thing that helped me with Doha, I'm generally and have always been someone who likes to go to the pool, do my training, get out of the pool. Like, I'm a pretty efficient trainer. Again, don't have mm-hmm. a lot of patience, so I just like to get stuff done. In Doha, being the world champs prior to the Olympics, there was so many people there. It was so busy. Training was slow, and I hate that. But the good part about it is that because it was hectic, you couldn't watch anyone, because we were standing, you know, five rows deep behind the 3 meters waiting for our turn. You couldn't see what anyone else was doing. In our training group, we had Great Britain. They'd already qualified a spot in our event, so I wasn't really concerned with what they were doing anyways. And then we had some of the smaller countries. So I didn't see the Americans train. I didn't see the Germans train. So for me, that was good because I hadn't mentally placed Maddie and I in the line of women's 3 meter synchro before the event, which historically I probably would have done. I would have mentally been like, all right, I know our training level's here. Someone's here, someone's here, someone's here. So I'm going to say we're going to come fourth or fifth or third or whatever, or just more likely, like, you know, I think we've got a chance to get on the podium. I didn't do that.
So you start doing that. You start doing that prior. Do you do that most competitions?
Well, no, I don't plan to, but they're the thoughts that might come into my head if I'm too aware of what's going on around me. So yeah, I just know I operate better when I'm not. Yeah, I'm just locked in and I'm focused on what I'm doing, and I'm not, you know, you can also, you know, Sam, you can train amazing and compete not well. So like what
all
you're
time.
Seeing in training is not a representation of definitely what's going to happen in a competition. So I know that, but it's easy to kind of get distracted when you're in that high pressure environment and there's a lot at stake. And if you let those thoughts come in, it can be detrimental. So I think it was good in Doha that I wasn't able to even have a look at anyone, because we got to our event. We were kind of nicely placed in the list. I think we were third or fourth or quite early on in the 19 team field, and mm-hmm. we went after Macau. So we didn't have China right before us getting nine, so we didn't have that high pressure, you know, you got to step up now because the team before you has stepped up. So it was a nice competition for us, and it worked out really well. We dived really well, felt solid, and our coaches were super happy. So yeah, didn't really know, we don't look at the scores, so we didn't really know where we were placed at any time in the competition, but to see our names in second and then staying in that silver medal position, and then it all kind of hitting home that meant we've qualified. It was pretty special.
And so the rules have changed. You now have qualified for the Olympics.
Yeah. So this is the first year in our Australian selection policy that if you medaled at this World Championships, given it was only 5 months out from Paris, that position will be yours. So we don't have Olympic trials until June, and Maddie and I won't compete, which is nice. You can just focus on individual and qualifying for that as well. But the whole team won't be officially nominated to our Australian Olympic Committee until after the trials, and then we'll be officially selected after that. So, we'll be nominated, but I can't really say that I'm officially on the team just yet.
But officially, unofficially.
Officially, official. Unofficially, officially, yeah.
Unofficially, yeah. Officially.
Officially. And so, yeah, whatever that is, yeah.
You spoke about scoreboards and not watching the score. Do you always not watch the score? Do you ever watch the scoreboard?
Yeah, as you can probably tell, I like get too distracted by those things. So I know, like, there's some people who thrive off knowing how many points they need to get to, you know, overtake the next person. But for me, I don't want to know. I don't want anything to detract me from just trying to do my job. And I've learned that for me, it's weird because in a lot of other activities, if I'm playing like kickball or downball or whatever, any like ball sport, I'm like so competitive and I want to win. And like I have that natural drive to be the best. So you'd think like in a diving competition, if I see someone get nines, like I'm gonna get 9.5s. Like, but I just don't have that. I don't have that in me in a diving competition. I just want to be in my little bubble, doing my own little thing, worried about myself. I know my training's good, so I want to replicate that in competition. And I've had to fight to like raise my competition level. You know, there's some athletes that training standards here and they compete here. I feel
They
like,
thrive off adrenaline.
yeah. And like for me, I'm a strong, powerful athlete. So if I have extra adrenaline, it's harder for me to
Not
control
good.
my dives.
Yep.
So I've always sort of struggled a little bit thinking like my training standards here and then my competition standards here. So I don't want anything to try and detract me from just doing my job. So yeah, I stay in my bubble, not concerned about other scores. Really try have headphones on so that I can't hear, which in a competition, you know, if you're going in backwards order, especially individually, you're going to hear some good scores before you. But
Yep.
yeah, I've just tried to figure out what works for me.
Okay, type of music. What's the latest?
Well, I did just go to
Conk
the
music.
Tay-Tay
Oh.
concert. No, I'm not the person to talk to about music because I'm like just a basic gal who listens to like pop music. But I have dabbled occasionally in like, do I need some more upbeat, like, I don't know, like more like rap kind of music in a competition? But I don't think that worked for me because I'm naturally like pretty energetic. So I more need things to, more need music to calm me down. So yeah, now it's like more chill music, but I'm not like a huge music guru, so I'm not really like fazed by exactly what I'm listening to.
Okay,
Yeah.
caffeine or no caffeine?
Well, no caffeine until I was like 24, and then I tried caffeine for the first time, and now I'm like, it's honestly, it's more of an enjoyment thing. I don't feel like I need coffee to get me like amped up, but I definitely always thought I was missing out when we'd have morning competitions and everyone at the buffet would be downing their coffees. I'm like, am I missing out? I'm like feeling awake because everyone else is drinking coffee. But when I eventually started to drink coffee, it's more now just part of my routine and I enjoy my morning coffee, whether it gives me extra energy for competition or not, I'm not sure, but I definitely wouldn't be like downing three coffees to try and get my energy levels up and then feeling jittery and whatnot. So I'm caffeinated, but I'm controlled caffeinated.
So if coffee was gone, you would be fine.
Probably.
I don't
My
think
body
you'd
would
be
probably need
friends.
to detox, but no, I do enjoy it now. So I do love my morning coffees, but I only have like one a day, so I'm not too hardcore.
Jeez, that's
Yeah.
impressive. I mean,
Hey, I'm not in the
survival.
working world yet, Sam, so you just wait. I'll probably change that in a year or two.
Wait till you wake up in the morning, like I need 3 shots of espresso immediately in
Yeah,
an
yeah.
IV.
Yeah.
Okay, so that one other thing, synchro. How's your relationship with Annabelle and I mean Maddie? How's your diet? Like, what's the dynamic with you guys? When Mikey and I were doing synchro, him and I know that we're totally separate types of people. He's very aggressive. He's very like a boxer, and I'm listening to John Mayer in the corner again in
Yeah.
my bubble,
Yeah.
trying to like bring things down because I have too
Yeah.
much energy and I need to relax. What is the dynamic with you two?
Yeah, it's so funny. Maddie and I also are very different. We're very different people, not so different athletes, but very different people. Like we're rooming together at competitions and Maddie is playing games online with her boyfriend and their crew of people back home, or like, yeah, watching other people play video games, and I'm on my bed watching beauty tutorials on YouTube, like how to apply my makeup better. Like, so we're like chalk and cheese in terms of what we're into. Like, Maddie's pillowcase is like a Pokemon pillowcase, and mine's like a silk one that's good for my skin. Like, we're just very different. But it's funny because we get along so well, and I think this is our 10th year doing synchro, so we know each other back to front. We know what makes each other tick. I quite often need like time on my own to re-energize and sort of like go out of the hotel and do things that I like to do, whereas Maddie's more than happy to stay at the hotel and, be on her laptop or be watching something or yeah. So we have very different needs and interests, but when we come together in synchro, our routine, we both listen to our own music. I'm playing some solitaire or something to distract my mind. If it's a long competition, she's doing something else on her phone. And then we put that down, we'll warm up a little bit, go over to our coaches, get our feedback, and then we're just trying to be chill behind the boards, and we usually try and make it pretty lighthearted and funny and talk about random stuff just to keep it like just like a calm sort of mood. So we're sort of more on the same page when it comes to the diving stuff. And it just works. It took us a while to get there, I think, and Maddie's had her struggles, I've had my struggles throughout that 10 years, and there's always been times where one of us has to really, like, I don't want to say carry the team, but you know, have your stuff together to bring the other one up. That's balanced out over the 10 years, and yeah, now we're in a really good position where we just let it happen because, yeah, she's happy in her own skin, I'm happy in my own skin, and we're very fortunate that we're two great divers that come together and make a great synchro team. So, yeah, we're grateful that we're in that position.
Super simple. Keep it simple. Well, great. That's all I got for you.
Amazing.
Was
Good chat,
that
Sam.
questions?
That was amazing.
I'm glad we could do that. That was I like to pick each other's brains on divers' brains on these topics because, like, so many people operate so differently, and there's so much insight on how to compete, how to go out through your career, and everybody, everybody's different, and ultimately, it's you got to figure out how to do it the way that works for you. When most people think, I got to do it because I look up to Greg Louganis and he did it this way, so I have to do it this way. It's like, I'll make it figure
Oh,
out for
so many
yourself.
different journeys. And mine is completely different to someone who's had more success or less success than me. So you can all get to the same spot in very different ways.
Exactly. So, well, thank you for joining today. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, but go Duraflex. We love
Oh, yeah.
the new boards.
Yeah, the new
It
stands have
helps
been
me to jump
good.
higher. Yeah, so good.
Well,
Nah,
glad
good
you like
chats.
them. I'll try and make them
Thanks,
even
man.
better this year, next year. I
Thank
don't know
you.
if you're going to keep diving next year, are you?
Who knows? If you make even springier boards, maybe.
Okay. If I do that, then you're saying.
Deal.
All right, deal.
All right, we'll see.
Thank you.
Thank you.